Well, for being in the middle of a quarantine or a pandemic, man, there's a lot of sports to get to on this Friday with Ben Fredrickson of the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. And as always, this is presented by our good friends at Henderson and Watercutty. They've been bringing us Ben Fred Fridays for a long time. And see what they offer at stlcriminaldefense.com. stlcriminaldefense.com. Couple of guys that started their firm right here in St. Louis, helping out folks in both Missouri and Illinois. And we're going to start with baseball, and then we'll jump around with soccer and college football. And we've got baseball, and we also have St. Louis Blues playoff hockey. As always, Ben, good morning to you. How are things going?
Good morning, Dan. Man, yeah, it's been a crazy week, and it's not over yet, but it was certainly fun to have a day that was not about, how the virus is impacting sports and in the soccer announcements. I think that was certainly a sweet highlight to end the week. But man, it's just been, I feel like it's one of those weeks where you finish a column and you go, okay, whew, got that. Then you look up and it's like, oh no, I got to write about that.
Yeah.
it's crazy, man. The way the Cardinals are trying to come back. It's the biggest story in baseball, I think, right now. Because everybody's watching it and everybody's interested in what it looks like. It's such a well-known team. And then you've got, oh, by the way, the most important games being played right now, of course, what the Blues are doing in Edmonton, which it's exactly what you said. For a time that is all about kind of easing back, it's like the sports world, especially for us, is full throttle right now.
Well, the other thing too, I should mention, maybe the most important game is being played in court too, and you broke the story, which is national.
Point.
And maybe we need to get Henderson and Watercutty to jump in on this one too.
I would love that.
They'll throw their services in on this one too with what's happening with the NFL. So I do want to get into that as well. But the Cardinals return to play. We've done this every Friday, Ben, trying to come back, see that the Cardinals can play, would be tomorrow with the doubleheader against the White Sox. They literally will have 41 guys traveling socially distant in cars, 41 different guys in their own car, or at least rental cars, driving to Chicago, doubleheader tomorrow. Then they would play the White Sox again on Sunday, doubleheader on Monday, and correct me if I'm wrong, then they would play, and that would be at Wrigley on Monday, then a game on Tuesday, another doubleheader on Wednesday. So they've got what would be three doubleheaders in 5 days, I guess it would be. So that would be Saturday, Monday, Wednesday, to try to fit all these games coming up. It's going to be an incredible amount of baseball coming up. They're going to try to obviously get this thing in. And as I'm looking at some of my notes now, it's 10 players that have COVID-19, 8 staff members. They've got Carlson, Elledge, Nagowski, Kaminsky, Sanchez would be the 29th player for the doubleheader. So they're going to have some major league debuts coming up. Dylan Carlson is the big one. Just in a general sense about all these things that are happening with the Cardinals, what are your thoughts about them and their return to play?
Yeah, it's hard to know where to start. I guess I'll say this first. Are you ready? Because I feel like you better be like drinking like tea with like honey, because you're going to be calling a bunch of games.
I'll put it this way. Just tell me when and where. Popular phrase, when and where.
I love it. Yeah, I love it. I hope you keep your voice. I was very, in on the soccer stuff yesterday. So when this came out, it was kind of like, I just saw the news of they're taking all these rental cars to Chicago. And my first reaction was, that's insane. And I'm still kind of there, but I've read, of course, what I always do in a situation like that, I go, okay, I got to go read Derek's story. And I go and read Derek Gould's story. I said, okay, it makes a little more sense because, the new positive, which we had been, seeing completely shut things down again, was from a coach who had not been around the team. So they feel like that was separated. But they still want to keep the team separated from one another. So that's how they cooked up this plan to have everybody drive. And to me, it just shows you how much this thing is just really being written on the fly by Major League Baseball, by the Cardinals, by them, figuring out what this looks like together. there's no rules right now for this team because it's outside of the rules when it comes to the protocol. So they're literally making them up as they go with the permission of Major League Baseball. And I guess that's kind of what we're all doing in this time to some degree. But if I would have told anybody, you know, entering this season, if a team got to the point where, you know, it had, 18 positives and it was sending players to on a 5-hour drive and everybody in their own rental car, people would have scoffed at the idea that it's no way that's going to happen. But here we are. And, you know, I think it speaks to this, what we heard Rob Manfred say earlier in the week, that he wants to see the Cardinals resume. He thinks it's possible they can, and it's kind of onward. And if that's going to be the case, then you really couldn't miss these games in Chicago. So I hope it works out. I fear that it could be viewed as short-sighted. Personally, frankly, and I have some concern about, you know, so many people driving themselves to Chicago. It just feels like it's desperation. And I hope that it works out. And I really do hope that it works out, and hope that they don't look back and go, man, I wish that was a rushed decision. I mean, it wasn't that long ago that the Cardinals were asked about the idea of busing two games, maybe to have some more distancing than a plane. You could have multiple buses. And that idea was kind of presented as, well, that's not realistic. But so, yeah, here we are now with everybody in their own rental car. And at the time, that certainly didn't seem realistic. So it just shows you how much things are changing, and how desperate the Cardinals and Major League Baseball are to get these guys up off the ground and playing again. So it'll be nice to have games back for sure. I think now the discussion to me becomes, what do they look like when they're on the field?
No doubt. No doubt.
They've gone more than 2 weeks without a game. There are certainly going to be some signs of rust, I imagine. There's going to be some signs of health not related to the virus. But there's also going to be some excitement, A, because they're back on the field, but B, because they did the right thing in calling up Dylan Carlson, especially after Lane Thomas went on the COVID list, because it was time. And now I think this season for me becomes about, let's see some of these young guys. I'd like to see, you know, Andrew Kisner. I'd like to see some of these young players and see how they fit in. And remember, too, Dan, that these guys have been playing as much as possible down in Springfield. And they're not rusty. They're ready to roll. So I think they could make an impact.
Well, I wonder if that's part of the competition aspect of Mike Schilt. Does he ease in some of the guys that haven't been playing? And do you play some of those that are the unknowns, right? The guys that you haven't seen. You may have seen them as a fan. Maybe you saw them in spring training. You're a Cardinal fan. You tune into the games and you said, oh, I know John Nagowski. I know Rob Kaminsky. I know Seth Elledge because I watch the games. I enjoy watching spring training baseball. Well, they've been down in these sim games, so they've been competing. Dylan Carlson has been competing. It's an advantage to have guys that have been competing. I wonder, number one, Ben, if it's beneficial to play those players. And number two, I am very concerned about the pitching, how to cover all the innings. So Adam Wainwright goes in game number one. Number two will be a bullpen game of the doubleheader. And number three will be Dakota Hudson in game three. So covering a lot right there, but I'm just very curious about your thoughts on what they do with both those issues going into these weekend games.
Yeah, I'd say play the kids, play the guys who are...
I'm kind of with you, yeah.
Who are ready. And then, you know, the guys who are back are going to want to play, and I get that, but they got to be smart, and the team's got to be smart. And it's so surreal, of all the things that are surreal here, it is surreal to talk about a Cardinal season of any way, shape, or form that is not a bottom line situation that the team is supposed to contend. The team is supposed to get into the playoffs. That's what the Cardinals sell, and that's what we should hold them accountable to doing. But I would be being disingenuous if I sat here today and said, this is about them winning, and this is about them, you know, and maybe they do find a way to get in. It sounds like Manfred is more and more open to the idea of just taking winning percentage as what decides who makes the postseason. But I can't, you know, I can't be true to myself and feel like this season is now about the Cardinals putting the pedal to the metal and going after the division. I mean, that would be insane. It's like five games. other teams have played, we're talking like 30% of their season. So this hill is massive. There are serious implications about how safe it's going to be for these guys just to jump back in, especially with so many doubleheaders. They've got to be smart. They've got to play their game, their ability, and focus on what they can find out with the rest of this season. And I do think perhaps the most valuable thing you get out of this experiment is you go into next season knowing, can Dylan Carlson handle this? We have more certainty about what our outfield looks like. I'd like to see, an Oviedo. He's not there now, but I'd like to see a guy like him. What can he do? Start to kind of get a feel for what some of these guys that are going to define your future teams can do, because it will help you with that process. So I know that sounds just crazy to talk about a Cardinal season that means more about future seasons than the current one, but that's kind of where I am. Now, I'm not saying that there's no chance, because, look, I go back to 2011 when I was an intern at the paper, and I left my internship from my dad because, hey, do the Cardinals have a chance to make the postseason? And Albert Pujols was hurt. And we got hurt in that game against the Royals at first base. And I said, there's no way. I said, they don't have a chance. They go on to win the World Series. Now, this is obviously a very different circumstance, but this is a bizarre season. If they go to win percentage and a bunch of teams make the playoffs, it will really depend on who's healthiest by the time the playoffs start. That could be in a bubble. We don't even know yet. There's so much just bizarreness to this. Maybe the Cardinals can put something together. But the thing that I'm looking at is, A, stay healthy. B, play some games. C, find out, use this time to find out what you have moving forward as much as anything.
Yeah. Let's switch gears because I want to cover a lot of stuff. In terms of the MLS, I was so excited to be a part of the crest and the logo and the name and the colors yesterday of the announcement, and soccer fans across the region got a little bit about what the future holds and what 2023 will look like. They've done things right, even during a pandemic, in my mind, Ben. And I thought it was an exciting time for soccer fans, and really just something to take people's minds off of what's going on. It was, as you mentioned earlier, it was a bright spot in what has been really a rough few months for everybody. So just your general impressions of what they were able to do yesterday, Carolyn Kendall Betts, the Kavanaughs, Tom Strunk, and just that ownership group and what they were able to do.
It was literally a bright spot, right? I mean, everybody's trying to figure out if that city red is pink or red, and talk about the yellow. So yeah, definitely a bright spot, and I agree with everything you said. And credit to you for really in a lot of ways helping lead the charge and a lot of the discussions that helped this happen. And I thought it was awesome that you were able to be the MC of sorts at the event. You were like one of like the six people who were in the room. I couldn't even get a cardboard cutout, so that shows you how important I am to this whole equation. But
I'm led the charge too. We both have had a lot of conversations about this, so you led the charge too.
It was great. And personally, I think what they're doing with the name city is a very great idea. I hope people hear them out when they talk about what they want that to mean and how they want everyone, whether you live in Edwardsville or Wentzville, to feel like you're a part of that brand, and that they're really trying to make that an inclusive term. And I hope folks understand their reasoning behind that and really hear their message on that. I thought that video that played of Sterling K. Brown reading that message was really powerful. I hope people hear it. I like the idea with the colors. You take the city flag, you put your own twist on it. You kind of, I would say, caffeinate the colors of the city flag and you roll with that. And the crest is, I mean, everybody's got an opinion on the crest. I like the nod to the arch. I think the biggest thing to me is that it's amazing that 20 designers worked on it and it actually got finished. Knowing a few designers, but I like what they're doing, man. And I think that people who get a feel for how they're going to go about it are going to like this team. The MLS is going to go after a younger crowd. They're going to go after that millennial group, but they're certainly not saying we only want those people, not saying we only want any people. I think what's really cool about them is they're making a point to say we want everybody. And we've seen that in their actions, you know, whether it's their fundraising relationships with Matthews Dickey, putting the announcement at Harris Stowe, you know, the majority female led ownership group, they're walking their talk. And so far they have done that. Now they're going to have to continue to do that because that's really what they're making a part of their theme. But if they continue to, and we have no reason to doubt they will, that's a thing a lot of people can get behind. So I like that the idea that they're going after maybe people who have not been reached by certain teams, and they're saying, hey, it's not, we're only doing that. We want everybody. And I think that's a message that at a time like this, where we spend a lot of time talking about all of our differences, that can be something that resonates with people. So I like that they're doing that.
Absolutely. Well put. You did an incredible job and have done an incredible job on the NFL front and where the lawsuit stands and where it sits. And there was huge news and should be national news on the NFL front, but it seems like a lot of the national writers don't really want to touch it. However, there is depositions to Stan Kroenke and Kevin Demoff and Jerry Jones and to the commissioner and Eric Grubman and Kevin Demoff, and the list goes on and on. Can you explain and take as much time as you want to explain the news that you broke the other day in the Post-Dispatch? And again, this is brought to you by Henderson and Watercutty, and I'm sure the good folks that are part of this lawsuit will add Henderson and Watercutty if they need to do any kind of work for this lawsuit, if they need to have them added to this. I'm just going to throw their services out there, Ben. You don't mind me doing that, do you?
No, and I want them to, I know they listen, and I appreciate them listening, and I want them to, if I bought something on this explanation, I want to hear from one of them, because I hope I'm not screwing this up. I'm putting on my pretend lawyer hat.
Okay.
And I try to, when I talk to folks about this who are lawyers, I say, okay, explain this to me like I'm in third grade. And then if they do that, then I can kind of understand it usually. But why this is news, especially here, and I'll get in a little bit to why I don't think it's maybe national news. For one reason that's good and one reason that's bogus. But first, let's start why it's news here. Since for folks to kind of streamline it, I just call it Team St. Louis. Since Team St. Louis, which represents the county, the city, and the Dome Authority, filed a lawsuit against the NFL, the Rams, Stan Kroenke, and all of the other owners in the league for a series of things that it believes were handled wrong and against the law during the relocation process, which basically boils down to a series of accusations that really stem from the league and the teams just blatantly disregarding their own relocation rules. You know, the things that St. Louis was told time and time again, these matter. These, we have to play by these things. We have to do these things to dictate moving a team. So if you do X, Y, and Z, then that's how you combat the idea of the team leaving. St. Louis did X, Y, and Z, and it comes to find out, you know, none of these rules matter, and it was all rigged from the beginning, and all the lies and the half-truths that were told meant nothing in the eyes of the NFL. And this lawsuit is about saying that's not right, and technically legally that's not right, and we're going to, you know, we're going to call into question why these relocation rules are treated as law one day and as something that can be tossed, you know, in the trash the next. That's the layman's explanation. So this process has gone on and on. The NFL has tried to say, you can't request these records. That's not, you know, within the scope of this case. And courts have said, no, they can. They can ask for all these phone records dating back from all these owners. So Team STL won that. The NFL and the Rams have said, well, this shouldn't be in trial. You know, this is sensitive. This needs to go to arbitration, which is a private, closed-door arbitration where sometimes depositions aren't under oath, and it just gets a little softer, everything. And Team STL said, no, that's not right. We don't want to do that. The Rams and the NFL appealed that all the way up, hoping the U.S. Supreme Court would say, no, it should go to arbitration. The U.S. Supreme Court said, we got better things to worry about. Okay, so it has to go now to either trial in St. Louis Circuit Court in 2021, or it will be settled. Those are the only two end roads now. So now it's to me, it's every moment that happens from here on out is significant because we know one of the two ways this will end. So the next milestone in this was Team St. Louis saying, okay, we're filing motions of deposition, which means that they put into a request all of the people that they want to depose. And because this case has like 90 defendants, they want to expand and they probably will get permission. It's common that they would the amount of depositions they can do. They want to do 42 and they want to talk to four of them for twice the amount of time that's usually allotted. So you get, when you do a deposition in a case like this, you get 1 7-hour period. It can be broken up, but you have 1 day, 7 hours in that day to do a deposition with that person. They want two of those days. And the people they want two of them for are Goodell, Kroenke, Eric Grubman, and who am I forgetting? Kevin Demoff. That's the other one. So, and then on top of that, they have basically what they're trying to do, from what I can tell. There's some names in there that most of us don't know. Some people that, I guess, you know, through their discovery, they feel like have found something out. They want to talk to NFL lawyers or, you know, some NFL executives that didn't play much of a role in the relocation process. But in addition to that, there's basically a representative from every team. Some of them are former representatives. Some of them are current. Some of them have changed jobs or moved careers. But really what they're trying to do, as best I can tell, is they're trying to piece together the room. Everybody that was in the room when the relocation vote went down that approved the Rams to go to Los Angeles. You remember how crazy that was. Initially, the LA committee approved or recommended the Chargers and Raiders to Carson plan. That recommendation was rejected. It went eventually, multiple votes were taken until a secret ballot came out, and then all of a sudden the Rams had the approval. And Jerry Jones had kind of strong-armed this thing through. He's also on the list of depositions. So they're trying to, from what I could tell, really recreate that room, and that suggests the way that they're going to, I think, try to argue this thing a little bit. Now, we don't know what they're going to find out in the depositions. We don't know what they've found out during the discovery process. And everybody, of course, wants to know, well, is this going to get settled or is this going to go to court? We don't know. I don't know that anybody involved knows. I don't think to this point there have been any attempts from the NFL to settle it. My understanding around the lawyers who represent the Team St. Louis side is that they don't have a lot of interest in settling. Of course, these things could always change. There's an assumption that the NFL doesn't want all this dirty laundry to get out in a public court setting, but we don't know yet. But this is the next kind of big chapter in it. There's reason to think, you know, the deposition requests will be fought back against. I mean, they fought everything to this point, but how they could not do them, I don't know. I think they're going to have to sit for these depositions, and we'll see where things go from there. But I think it's a huge story for St. Louis. I think it's a huge story nationally. I did kind of ask around, why is no one covering this? And I really kind of got two answers. One is that, and this made some sense to me, that it's, you know, a request for a deposition is not, you know, is not the final process, and it's not the fact that they've been done, and it's not Roger Goodell showing up in St. Louis for an interview. That would be, when it gets to that point, maybe that will be bigger national news. But the other thing, and I think this is true too, people who rely on the NFL for their news, who have to maintain great relations with the league, it's not beyond the league or any team to really kind of try to look down upon certain kinds of coverage and limit access or information based off of the coverage of that. And I think we're seeing some of that effect. The NFL owners, they don't want the story to be covered. They don't want it to pop up in the headlines. They want it to go away. And they're upset with Sam Kroenke, some of them, that it has not gone away. And Kroenke's upset because he, according to a great piece of reporting that Seth Wickersham and his colleague Don Van Atta did in ESPN a while back, apparently Sam Kroenke is still on the hook for all of the legal expenses that the league is accruing during this time, during this lawsuit, because of a document that he signed on the day of the vote. So he's frustrated by this. And it's just a very touchy, raw subject right now because it's not going away. They've scoffed at this lawsuit, and no one's laughing anymore. and it can kind of continues to trudge forward. And this is just the latest step forward in it. And that's probably much longer of an explanation than anybody wanted, but that's where things are right now.
It is amazing. College football, we saw the on the West Coast, they've shut it down. The Big Ten, you know, they had a schedule, then 5 days later they said we're done. And I would assume the Big Ten thought, well, if we shut it down, everybody else is going to shut it down. Everybody said, no, we're not going to do it. And the SEC is going forward, at least for the time being. In your opinion, do you think we have college football this fall?
Man, I'm gonna bet the under, but I would not be surprised if the SEC and the ACC and the Big 12 say, hey, we're doing it. I think it's gonna get very ugly for those three conferences very soon, because now the programs that the conferences that chose not to play are gonna spend time basically applying pressure in various ways on the ones that did.
No doubt.
And that's not how it should be, but that's how it's gonna happen. You throw in the fact that, look, let's be honest, you throw in the fact that this is an election year and everything now has become hit with this wash of politics, that's going to play into it. I think to me, the Big 12 is kind of the swing vote here, to use no pun intended. If they bail and all of a sudden it's three Power Fives not playing against the two that are, I think that's harder to hold the line. But if they keep three together, then I think they can give it a shot. And look, man, I am as confused as anybody when it comes to what's going on in college football. I understand, you know, if someone can tell me that the virus is that we're better and safer against the virus by not playing on Saturdays in the fall, college football, then I get it. And I think who wouldn't be all for it, but I'm legitimately confused. And I think a lot of people are, that you can have doctors telling the Pac-12 and the Big Ten that it's not safe to play, and doctors in the SEC and the ACC and the Big 12 saying it's safe to play. I'm confused as to how you can have these college players on campus, going to classes, going to fraternity parties, living in the dorms, hanging out. That's okay, but and they continue to practice or continue to have team activities, workouts, be in the facilities, and that's okay, but playing a game on Saturday isn't. I don't get that, and I don't think a lot of people get that, and no one can answer that question. Even people who are, you know, fully respectful of the virus and have and want everybody to be safe. I think what's going on here personally is that a bunch of colleges and a bunch of athletic directors and the college football, as we know it, are afraid of getting their tails chewed off if something happens that puts, you know, that can be traced back to football involvement with the virus or a complication from it. And, you know, then it gets into the discussion of, hey, these guys aren't employees. They didn't get to negotiate the terms of their return. I don't think it's a coincidence at all that the first two Power Five conferences that bailed were the first two that heard from players asking for a bigger voice in this process. I think the amateur model, which works so well for college football to make a ton of money, works very poorly for this kind of discussion. And I think that's what we're seeing as much as anything.
Ben, as always, great stuff. So well informed. We'll do it again next Friday. Let's hope we're talking more baseball, talking more hockey at that point, and talking maybe more about the Cardinals winning some games. We'll see if that's the case next week. But great reporting on the NFL and on soccer this week, and we'll catch you up next Friday, my man. Thank you so much.
Sounds good, man. Yeah, have a good weekend.